How can someone be both privileged and poor? That's the question Harvard researcher Anthony Jack is hoping you'll ask when you take a look at his work. He's created a new category of low-income college students in his work, calls them the privileged poor, and they are the kids who went to private high schools, studied abroad, things like that. So they had access to the cultural capital that made college for them a lot easier to navigate.
And so they're poor on the one hand, economically, but privileged with the kind of access they had to the educational and the social experiences that we usually associate with the top 1%.
That goes in contrast to the other category of low-income college kids Jack identifies, the doubly disadvantaged.
They are economically poor. They don't come from families with money. But where they are most underserved is because of structural inequalities and the disinvestment in public education that lead them to go to typically distressed, underfunded, under-resourced, and overcrowded high schools. When they make the transition to college, it looks like a new world to them. They experience culture shock.
Jack is himself a member of the privileged poor category. He was a Head Start kid that went to public school until his junior year when his football coach helped him transfer to Gulliver Preparatory School in Miami. And a year later, he found himself at Amherst College. So it was his own experience that sent him down this research path later in life. And that's where we began when I caught up with him via Skype.
Everybody experiences some form of surprise when going to college. You know, like there are just some things that are new for everybody. But it wasn't as much new for me as it was for my peers.
You're looking at this cultural difference that really plays out in people's college experiences. Like, what was the difference? How does this manifest itself for these kids?
You know, one example that I like to use in answering this question is office hours. Office hours is a very class term. Unless you have been to a college campus, had family who has been to a college campus, or you went to one of those few high schools that are resource rich enough to have something akin to office hours, you've probably never heard the term before, right? Office hours are nothing more than a time that faculty members make themselves available for students,
yeah,
right? But that's also the way to get letters of recommendation, because students get to know faculty and faculty get to know students. It's how you get research assistantships. It's how you get introduced to headhunters because that professor knows you and knows your story, right? And so the way in which we have this hidden curriculum, this system of unset rules and hidden expectations that students must navigate is very classed.
Yeah.
And what I show is that the privileged poor, by virtue of going to private high schools that are more akin to colleges than secondary institutions, are prepared for it, are accustomed to it, and are at ease in navigating these type of relationships before they hit campus. Whereas the doubly disadvantaged are not. They are shocked by it. They think that, ironically enough, in the most meritocratic way, that getting ahead in college should be about the work. Hmm. They should keep their head down and get the best grades. Even though they have the most to gain from it, they stand to lose the most because they don't know the hidden curriculum.
So what do you think should or can be done about this?
I mean, there are very simple things that can be done. For example, what would it mean if they were just to define office hours on the first day? I've worked with faculty members who have been teaching for 40 years, and the look of shock on their face when they tell me, Tony, I've been teaching for 4 decades, and I've never thought to define office hours.
Right.
Right? Like, think about that. It begins us to think about what we take for granted.
Yeah.
And that mindset of being open to questioning what we take for granted is the beginning to how institutional change happens.
So it sounds like your research and just having this conversation initially is going to change a lot, or should.
I hope so. And even though we've talked about the social hurdles that lower income students face, there's one other thing that I would like to talk about. We cannot believe that this is all about social preparation. One of the clearest examples that everyone can relate to is what happens on campus during spring break. To many lower income students who can't afford to go home, they have to stay on campus, but universities shut down.
Mm.
There's no dining hall during spring break. There's no support services. Some schools even turn down the heat. What if you're one of those students who can't afford to go home or who does not have a home to go to? You face a reality that we don't necessarily associate with students. You face food insecurity. You don't know where your next meal is coming from for days on end. This is a reality that a significant number of our students face day to day. We cannot think that it's just like these social programs that will help students acclimate to college life, not when university policies amplify class differences in the way that it does during spring break.
It sounds to me like you're looking for a paradigm shift. You're looking for universities to completely change their perspective.
Yes. Universities take for granted not just what students know, but what they can afford. And so I hope that my research pushes them to question again what they take for granted, especially as it pertains to their diversification efforts, right? Access is not inclusion. A financial aid package connected to admissions is one thing. What happens to that student and whether they feel like a second-class citizen in the first-class world once they get to campus is another thing in its entirety.
All right. Anthony Jack is an assistant professor of education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and he's the author of the new book, The Privileged Poor. Tony, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So what does that feel like for students who aren't from the quote-unquote privileged poor? How difficult can it be to navigate that first day in a college classroom? To find out, I sat down with two first-generation college students from right here in Arizona. Alvaro Martinez and Christopher Frias are seniors at ASU and the first in their families to go to college. You'll hear Frias first here.
I am a Phoenix native, born and raised. I come from a family of four, so my single mother and then my two older siblings. And given the fact that my mother was a single mother and whatnot, we had a very low income household. And she knew that because she herself dropped out of high school to have my older brother and had to return to get her GED, she knew that education was the path out of poverty. So from a very early age, she did all she could to make sure that I was reading a lot. She tried to take whatever classes that were available at my public schools and just kind of push the idea that I needed to go to college and then that was there wasn't an alternative option out there.
So that was always the case in your head, like I'm definitely going to college.
Correct, yes.
What about you, Alvaro?
Yeah, so I pretty much came from in a low-income community. I didn't go to a high school that talked about college a lot. The person who pushed me the most about going to college was my mom. So she's a big role model in terms of moving forward with my life and getting higher education. So my mom researched all of the different degrees that I could pursue in science because it paid the most money. My mom found a degree called astrophysics, and I looked into it more and saying, wow, the study of the universe, this seems so interesting. Let me look at some more shows about this. And I came to the conclusion that astrophysics was for me.
So and she picked your major?
Pretty much.
And you're still doing that, right? You're still majoring in astrophysics now?
Yeah. I know the dropout rate for an astrophysicist is about 90%. So for me to be coming this far is definitely a blessing.
Yeah. So you're both in college now, almost done at this point. But I want to talk about what it was like. Like when you started college 4 years ago, what was it like when you walked into that classroom for the first time?
I remember the very first day of college, it was, you know, of course, 120 degrees outside. I was stressed trying to find my classes. I woke up super early just to kind of map out where to go. And I just remember walking in and it was this kind of a lecture of about 100 students or so. And I just remember that I'm dripping sweat. I'm very confused about if there's like a seating chart or if there's something along those lines. And so I kind of picked a spot towards the very middle of the room. And the professor walks in and she just like goes straight into our lecture. Half the students in the room have laptops out, half the students have notebooks. And so it was just a lot of me kind of looking around, seeing what I should do, if I should kind of copy people, or I mean, I thought we're just done with the syllabus today, so I'm very confused what's going on here. Yeah, I mean, it was just very isolated, like, experience, just kind of to navigate, you know, the first couple of weeks of just getting, you know, your schedule down, what the process looks like once you're actually in the classroom, and just things of that nature.
Yeah. What about you, Alvaro? You remember that first day?
So it was my astronomy class, which was the very first classroom of the very first day of school. Very daunting. No one tells you where to get help. It's like you learn the material, cool, where do I ask questions? Who can I go to for help? And no one really told me that. And eventually, ASU offers a lot of tutoring centers for any type of subject, and that's something I had to figure out on my own.
Did you notice the difference between yourselves and the sort of, you know, flailing you felt like you might have been doing these first couple of weeks and other students who seemed more prepared or somehow knew what was going on?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was such a surreal change for me, just because in high school, I was towards the top of my class. And so I was used to being the one that was very confident and like sure of myself and what I was doing. And then you come into college and a lot of your peers have gone to summer preparation camps or have gone to a drawn out orientation or something along those lines to kind of orient themselves to the college experience. And for me, it was just a lot of adjustment that seemed overwhelming and kind of seemed like it diminished me in a little bit in some sense, just because I felt like if I was struggling so much and my peers weren't, do I belong here? Is that something that reflects badly on me rather than reflects badly on like the situation I grew up in?
So you're almost done, right? What do you think that this has done for your college experience? Kind of the backgrounds that you came from, the being the first ones in your families to do this and having to navigate this on your own, do you think it's made you better students, stronger students? Do you think it's made it harder?
So for me, I've been taught by my parents that hard work always pays off, and that I have to work as hard as I can to be the best and pretty much to pass. Well, that's pretty much paid off for me. I'm glad it came from a low-income community because most of my peers, they were very privileged, and they just assumed I got my work cut out for me. I took a lot of AP. I don't have to study. I could do it. Mm-hmm. Well, as for me, I just study every single day, just put in the work, and get made it this far.
Similarly, I think that coming from the background I did come from and knowing the different outcomes that if I didn't do well in college, I could potentially end up at, I knew that I did have to work twice as hard as most of my peers. I had to have multiple part-time jobs while I was being a full-time student. And just having that time management skill and having that ability to get work experience and to really learn how to navigate like complex systems and things like that, that definitely has contributed a lot to me in the long run. So I think this definitely my background and my experience has given me a kind of resilience and giving me kind of a perseverance attitude about things that I definitely feel will help a lot in the long run.
Yeah. All right. Christopher Frias, Alvaro Martinez, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.